Good evening. Need my script today. I'd like to call to order the Shoreline City Council meeting for Monday, May 5th, 2025 to order. Will you please join me in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Will the clerk please conduct the roll?
Mayor Roberts.
Here.
Deputy Mayor Mort.
Present.
Councilmember Ramsdell. Councilmember Robertson. Councilmember Adamasu.
Present.
Councilmember Poby.
Here.
Councilmember Scully.
Present. Do you want a motion, Mr. Mayor?
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, I move to, go ahead. Oh, I move to excuse Councilmember Robertson as well as Councilmember Ramsdell.
Second.
There's a motion and a second to excuse Councilmember Robertson and Ramsdell for personal reasons. Is there any discussion? Seeing no objection, the motion passes unanimously. First, I'd like to recognize that today is Missing, Murdered, and Indigenous Women's Day. I'd also like to proclaim the month of May on behalf of the Shoreline City Council as National Bike Month, and I encourage residents to bike for recreation and transportation. And I'd also like to proclaim the month of May as Mental Health Awareness Month and emphasize the importance of identifying and treating mental illness. I also am happy to proclaim today, and we have some guests here from Shoreline Community College's WAVE program, to accept the proclamation of Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. And we have, as I said, we have two guests from Shoreline Community Colleges here. We have Army Beth Tan Badu and Macy Noalani Glory, who are here today. I'm sorry for butchering your names. If you'd like to come up and accept the proclamation. Spelled out for me too. Whereas in 1992, Congress designated May as Asian Pacific American Heritage Month to celebrate and honor the histories, cultures, and contributions of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in the United States. And whereas Asians, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders are made up of people from many diverse cultures with unique heritages, representing a broad range of experiences and perspectives. And whereas Asians, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders make up about 15% of Shoreline, 23% of King County, and 10% of Washington State, and are the second largest and fastest growing population group in Washington State. And whereas we recognize the xenophobia, harassment, violence, and racism that these communities have faced throughout history, which intensified during the COVID-19 pandemic and continues today, and whereas May provides more opportunities to learn about the valuable impacts and current work these communities are engaged in and how to support those efforts, now, therefore, I, Christopher Roberts, Mayor of the City of Shoreline, on behalf of the Shoreline City Council, do hereby recognize May 2025 as Asian Pacific American Heritage Month in the City of Shoreline and encourage all to celebrate and learn more, not only in May, but throughout the year.
Good evening, or in Tagalog we say magaling gabi po, and it is an honor to be able to stand here today and accept this certification and bring in the month that celebrates the different cultures that are included in AANHPI Heritage Month. My name is Army Beth Bada, and I am the Filipinos American Student and Allies Club President at Shoreline Community College. Our mission is to promote and celebrate Filipino culture through social events, cultural workshops, and community service. Through our events, we welcome students from all backgrounds to join us about learning, experiencing the rich and diverse culture of the Philippines. Aloha kako o Macy ko'u inoa. Hello everyone, my name is Macy Glory and I'm the president of the Hawaii and the Polynesian Culture Club at Shoreline Community College. We aim to not only share culture through food, events, and workshops, but also help create a familiar environment to those of us who have came to Washington from the Polynesian, Micronesian, and Melanesian islands. We welcome anyone who is open and willing to learn about our island homes and want to share the spirit of aloha. In honor of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander Heritage Month, we would like to extend our invitation to the Shoreline community to join us at the Across the Pacific Night, an AANHPI month celebration at Shorewood High School on May 16th from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. It's free entry and there will be an art gallery, carnival games, performances, food, and a book fair. All are welcome, so come and celebrate our different cultures with us. Thank you.
The next item is approval of tonight's agenda. If there are no objections or comments, the agenda is adopted by unanimous consent. Next on the agenda is the report of the city manager, Mr. Ellington.
Good evening, Council. I want to start today's meeting with a reminder that we are hosting another open house tomorrow for the new sidewalk project coming to Dayton Avenue North. Please join us at the Richmond Highlands Recreation Center from 7 to 8 p.m. to learn more about the project and give us your thoughts on design options. Learn more about this project by visiting shorelinewa.gov/Dayton Sidewalk. Due to the temporary closure of the Shoreline Recology store, Recology is hosting small pop-ups for Shoreline residents at City Hall. The next one will be on Thursday, May 8th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. here in the council chamber. Shoreline residents can drop off limited quantities of hard to recycle items. Recology will not accept any other hard to recycle items besides the ones listed on the slide. There are some drop off limits, but you can visit recology.com/shoreline for the full details of this pop-up event. Join us this Saturday, May 10th, as we celebrate the Shoreview Off-Leash Dog Park reopening. The ribbon cutting will be at 11:15 a.m., followed by a short program sharing information on the work performed to improve the site. Local vendors will be on site to provide information on services available for our dogs. We have two upcoming Shoreline Walk events this week. The first is the Krukenberg Garden Flower Walk on Friday, May 9th at noon. This walk is open to all ages and abilities. Additionally, the gardens will be selling plants, so come prepared if you'd like to bring any home. The next walk is the Meridian Park to Shorewood High School Walk on Saturday, May 10th at 10 a.m. Please keep in mind that this walk is rated moderate because it includes one very steep hill, which may be challenging for some walkers. You can learn more and see upcoming walks at shorelinewa.gov/shorelinewalks. And finally, I have just a couple of public reminders to share. The Planning Commission will meet Thursday, May 15th here in the council chambers at 7 p.m. The next council meeting will be on Monday, May 12th. And the Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Services Tree Board's next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, May 22nd, which is also at 7 p.m. And for more information about these upcoming meetings, please visit shorelinewa.gov/calendar. And that concludes the city manager's report.
Thank you very much. Are there any council reports this evening? Councilmember Ademus.
Thank you, Mayor. I attended the Affordable Housing Committee meeting. One of the priorities this year is increasing the amount of affordable home ownership. House Bill 1403 passed, which will assist in this effort regarding condominium liability law. I also attended the King County City's Climate Collaboration meeting. The Recycling Reform Bill and Clean Fuel Standard are two of the bills that passed the legislature. $20 million is earmarked to go towards solar and battery storage. City of Issaquah has used monies like this for their resiliency hubs, which assists residents before, during, and after emergencies. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further council reports? Okay, thank you. Next on the agenda is public comment. This is the portion of the meeting where members of the public may address the City Council on agenda items or any other matter pertaining to city business for 3 minutes or less, depending on the number of people wishing to speak. And I believe we do have some people signed up today.
I have 4 in-person speakers and 2 online speakers.
Okay, we're going to start with the in-person speakers first and then the online speakers. When your name is called, please come to the podium and begin your testimony with your name and city of residence.
First, I have Lance Young and then Larry Moore.
Hi, I'm going to speak on item 8, but I understand I speak after the presentation.
Okay, yes. If you are here to speak on the public hearing, you can wait until after that presentation.
Then our next speaker is Larry Moore.
Welcome. I'm here to speak about Shoreline's recent change in tree regulations. I think this is...
Can you start with your name and city of residence, please?
I'm sorry?
Your name and city of residence. We'll restart. Name and city of residence.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can restart.
Larry Moore, Shoreline. I live in Richmond Beach.
Thank you.
Okay. One of the things that I heard when Shoreline was formed 25 years ago, one of the things I was warned about was the tyranny that sometimes occurs when you're dealing with small town leadership groups. I haven't felt that way most of the time. I've been fairly happy with what's been done over the years. I haven't agreed with everything, but most of it has been reasonable. The new tree regulations are completely unreasonable. There's no question that the city of Shoreline is gouging people who need to take trees down. It's totally unfair. I mean, you guys didn't push the envelope on this, you burned the envelope. I think it's absolutely outrageous. I hope that the city gets sued silly over this. I regret the fact that your personal liability is no greater than mine as a taxpayer. I think in some situations as egregious as this, you should be up against it on this one. But unfortunately, the law doesn't allow that. But I'm going to do everything I can to speak against this and get it changed if that's possible. It's just absolutely outrageous. Telling somebody they have to spend $3,000 in a fee just to get rid of a tree is ridiculous. That's their property. It's not your property. It's Shoreline. It's the property owner's property. They're paying the taxes on it, not you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I have Kathleen Russell, then Matthew DeAngelis.
Welcome.
Kathleen Russell, resident of Shoreline, on behalf of Save Shoreline Trees. There is mention in the 2024 Climate Action Plan report that the tree canopy will increase 3% by 2050. It will take 29 years for the tree canopy to increase 3%. Here is our current report on trees, implementing the current tree code pertaining to housing and sidewalks. One project is adding 15 units of market-rate townhouses where 2 houses stood, and 20 tall trees, mostly conifers, will be removed. Another project will build 10 homes where two houses stood, and 25 trees, mostly firs, will be cut down. Taking into account exempt trees, part of the tree code, more than 65% of trees on residential lots can still be removed. The new sidewalk along Dayton Avenue North between North 178th and Richmond Beach Road will remove between 31 and 43 trees, mostly conifers. It is not status quo. There is housing, sidewalks, bike lanes, and less trees. By our conservative count, more than 4,511 significant trees have been cut down since 2019 or are scheduled to be cut down. There are literally no replacements for the tall evergreen trees that are removed that are 50 to 60 years old. Fir trees, as they age, store more carbon, cleaning the air. While tree regulations, including the recent tree code council approved, might encourage builders to design around trees, regulations will not increase the tree canopy. This will come from a city plan to plant more trees using the restricted tree funds. We ask that the city inform residents where trees are being planted and concentrate tree planting in the census blocks with lower tree canopy, including parts of Richmond Highlands, also Echo Lake, North City, Meridian Park, Parkwood, Briarcrest, the neighborhoods east of Aurora, which have been significantly impacted by tree removal. This climate action supports environmental equity. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Matthew DeAngelis, and I live in Meridian Park, and I just wanted to comment on the climate action plan. Two of Shoreline's biggest producers of carbon are personal vehicle driving and housing and heating housing. And the good news for us is that we have extensive research on how to combat both of these. It's very well understood. We have to reduce personal car miles driven. And we do that by ensuring access to transit, ensuring access to bike lanes, and just disincentivizing driving, encouraging any other mode of transit. The city has made strides in this respect. I drove into work every single day before the pandemic. I have not driven into work in years. I take the train to work now. I love it. I'm very happy about this. I saw in the report that driving miles have gone down in Shoreline, and I think that's incredible. We're doing the right thing, and I want to make sure we keep doing more of it. And then when it comes to home energy use, home heating costs, that sort of thing, everything the city does to encourage people to install heat pumps and insulate their houses is wonderful. I think the other thing we should be doing more of, and we're doing some, and I'd like to see more, is just encouraging more density. When you have houses that share walls, they use less energy. It's just a simple physical fact, and we can be doing more of that. And lastly, I'd love to see more businesses I can walk to. I don't want to have to get in my car and drive somewhere. I don't want to have to take the train even into Seattle. I want to just walk out of my house and support businesses that are here. It's great for our economy. It's great for our environment. Makes our citizens happier. I mean, it's a win-win all around. So please keep prioritizing those goals, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I believe we have two people who have signed up remotely.
We do, but I believe they have signed up for the public hearing also.
Okay. So those are all the people who've signed up to speak. If there anyone in the audience who'd like to address the council during general public comment, please come to the podium, state your name and city of residence, please. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Kyle McQueen, and I'm a resident of Seattle, but me and my father currently run a ski shop here in Shoreline called Seattle Ski and Snowboard, and it's adjacent to a property that the Parks Department is looking into acquiring. I've been working at this ski shop for 16 years, and I've been around this property a very long time. I think that if it were to be developed into a park, it would culture a very good environment in that area. They bring a lot more positive foot traffic through the interurban trail instead of citizens of Shoreline being a little more scared of going through that. Many projects have not worked out on that privately owned parcel, and the lot sitting empty attracts more camping and drug use. I think if it were owned by a public, by the public, it would be definitely more maintained and easily, addressing the kind of those issues that we were kind of having on a private lot currently. This area of Shoreline definitely does lack parks. And based on the PROSA plan that you guys have, a pump track, along with other activities directly supporting that 12-step kind of plan on building parks that bring about like tangible improvements to the area, would be a huge uptick in just positive environment in that area. It's encouraging kids to get outside more in the neighborhood. It's a great way to bring the community together when building a park instead of just having an empty lot sitting there for years and years and years. It'd be a great partnership between the park and our adjacent business. Since our current lot is a little slightly small for kind of our expansion plans, and the 1.35 acre lot is pretty big for, it's a sizable park. Especially on that spot, we would love to kind of continue a conversation about the possibility of adjusting the lot line and getting into a partnership with the city there. I am definitely in support of you guys acquiring that land, building a park, and making a really, really successful kind of little community there. Our plans would kind of, hope at least, would be to have a little cafe there, would be to have outdoor seating, so in the summer, parents could be, you know, sitting down on the patio, looking at the pump track and seeing their kids play. It would definitely culture a very, very fun environment and bring happiness to the citizens of that neighborhood. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the council at this time? Okay. The next item is approval of the consent calendar. Is there a motion?
I move approval of the consent calendar.
I second that.
The consent calendar has been moved and seconded. Will the clerk please conduct a vote?
Mayor Roberts.
Aye.
Deputy Mayor Moore.
Aye.
Councilmember Poby.
Aye.
Councilmember Adamasu.
Aye.
Councilmember Scully.
Aye.
That motion passes unanimously, 5-0. The next item on the agenda is a public hearing and action on the purchase of real property located at 14925 Aurora Avenue North, identified as King County Parcel Number 282710-0005, in authorizing the city manager to take the necessary steps to complete the property purchase. The agenda is going to be a staff presentation followed by public testimony and council discussion. And it looks like we have a staff report.
Yes. Good evening, Mayor, Deputy Mayor, and Council. I'm Nathan Dom, Economic Development Program Manager, and I'm joined by Mary Reedy.
Mary Reedy, Parks, Recreation, Community Services Director.
So we're here to discuss the property, as you mentioned. Sorry for putting the full parcel number and making you read all those numbers. This property came on the market, or came to our attention recently as an opportunity, and we'll describe a little bit about how we got here. But it's been a number of years of in the making, and identified through the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan and Arts Plan as a priority for the city in a number of ways. This just is a very short sort of highlights from the PROSA plan and some of the ways in which this property represents an opportunity, particularly. It's in an area that's identified for with a need for additional park space. It's listed there among those priority areas. And the potential use that we have discussed for the site, particularly ideal for, is something that has been the subject of a lot of advocacy that the city has heard and is a growth activity with demand projected to continue to grow in the future. Just a little bit more background. PROSA plan included a property acquisition and development decision-making framework, which is a process we follow to evaluate all properties for potential acquisition, to ensure that future resource allocation is equitable and directed towards really making the city a welcoming place for all. This, we've also implemented park impact fees following the last PROS plan and then updated those in 2024. We won't go into detail on that, but just enough background on the background. On this particular property, it's in that area that we talked about as being a priority for the city, and staff received direction from council to focus in on that area, and specifically along the Interurban Trail and the Westminster neighborhood to really help activate the trail area with recreation and positive activity and address the deficit of open space in that neighborhood. In 2025, this year, early this year, we updated council on that opportunity of that site. We obtained an appraisal and also a second appraisal review to just to double check the math as we always do, and then offered to make a purchase of the property at the appraised price. So the site is, as we've discussed, it's on Aurora. It's near the high capacity transit service of the Rapid Ride E line, obviously, as well as the access from the Interurban Trail. So an opportunity for multiple uses identified in the PROS of plan, but as mentioned earlier, BMX or pump track is a particularly active use that would be particularly well suited to that area as well. It's an underserved area, and there's an opportunity for the public-private partnership as discussed in the staff report as well. So the financial impact, this just quickly details some of the information available in that staff report as well, but purchase price $4.4 million with an estimated about $50,000 in some of the costs related to the transaction. Securing the site and things along those lines. We would most likely be acquiring using park impact fees. We would definitely approach the Washington State RCO for grant funds of $1 million, which would then reduce that park impact fee amount required. But of course, we could always potentially use general funds should that be available. The funding source is not something we're seeking direction on, though, this evening, but just to give you a sense of the different variety of options available to us. So the proposal is that we would recommend making this purchase, moving forward with this purchase of this property. And we have drafted this motion to make that easy, should someone wish to make that motion. And again, since this is coming before council for the first time, we're following rules of procedure 6.1b. Which is this staff report followed by public comment, and then on to your review at that point, and we'll be here to answer any questions you should have.
Thank you. I now wish to open the public hearing. Public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per person testifying. As I know that we have people who have signed up for this or signed up for general public comment who want to defer their comment to this. So I believe we have at least one person in the audience and two online. So we'll start again. We'll start with in-person speakers first.
So, Lance Young.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Lance Young. I'm a resident of Shoreline for many years now, and a Westminster neighborhood resident as well, so very close by to the property you're considering to purchase. And I want to first thank Kyle for showing up. He and his father run, I think, one of the best remaining family-owned pro shops in the area, and one of the few remaining ski rental, you still rent equipment, shops in the city, Seattle or Shoreline. But he mentioned a little bit of the history. This property has been attempted to be developed as high-rise apartment living twice in the past 18 to 20 years. First time it was resisted by the neighborhood and there was such an uproar that they backed out of the project. The second time there was also neighborhood resistance, but it was actually, I think, the COVID banking issue that shut the project down. So there's significant neighborhood resistance to development, but I think a park would be a great solution for this area, less resistance to that sort of thing, and a great addition to the interurban trail because it ties right in, especially with biking and running and that sort of activity. And then also I thought the city staff did a very good job on getting a good price on this. The previous developer was going to pay $5.6 million, so another million plus over what you guys are getting it for. That'd be great. There was some concern expressed at the neighborhood meeting that we had on site a few days ago about homeless, perhaps drug abuse, you know, that sort of thing. I think turning it into a park, putting it into the hands of the city, gives city police much more control and ability to control that sort of thing. So I think that would be an advantage. I also emailed the council members a great study that was done by Dr. Wolf with the UW on improvement in safety based on green space in neighborhoods. So I thought that was another great reason to turn this into a park. So I'd advocate that you vote for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we have two people signed up online, I believe.
Yes, the two people I've signed up to speak are Aiden Bartolink and Brian McQueen. I don't see either of those attendees in my list here. If you could use the raise your hand feature so I could find you if your name doesn't match your username. Otherwise, I don't see them.
Okay, is there anyone else in the audience who'd...
I'll speak. Larry Moore again from Richmond Beach. This kind of ties into something I brought to the council's attention last week. This sounds like a really good proposal. There certainly aren't a lot of parks in the area, and there are crime problems. Perhaps this will help with that. It'd be a nice place. I have no complaint with that at all. My question is, are we hiring people to care for these parks? That's one of my complaints, is we're adding parkland, we're not adding employees to care for the parks. I'm throwing that at you people. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? And have we heard from no one online?
Nope.
Okay. Okay, we're gonna close the public hearing. Is there a motion? Councilmember Povey.
Thank you, Mayor. I move to approve the acquisition of the property located at 14925 Aurora Avenue North, identified by the tax parcel number as listed on page 1 of the staff report, and authorize the city manager to take the necessary steps to complete the property purchase.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Councilmember Poby.
Thank you, Mayor. I think this is in the right direction. For the past week, I've been reading a lot about pump tracks, and I was wondering, okay, this is going to be fun. And so it's exciting that we are moving in this direction. Obviously, I was going to talk about finance, but I was warned that that's not why staff is here this evening. I'm still curious, though. I was going to ask a percentage of PIF. You know, maybe that's not confirmed yet. And then from RCO, that's also not confirmed yet. So I'm thinking more is coming from general fund.
At this point, we calculate enough PIF dollars to be able to cover the purchase. So we're hoping to backfill it with RCO grants. We think this would be a very competitive RCO grant application at the full $1 million. There potentially could also be, depending on the King County Parks levy, that's on the ballot in August, potential opportunity within that, because they did expand on that ballot measure, will be expanded opportunity for grant funding as well. And as Kyle spoke to as well, partnering with their business to look at lot line adjustments as well.
Yep. Beautiful. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councilmember Scully.
Thanks. Just a couple of questions. I'm voting for this. I think it's a great plan. Addressing the crime issues there, I mean, it's a vacant lot right now, so I'm not sure it will get any worse, or it could get any worse, and activating it, I think, will certainly help. But I do would like a little more information on sort of the development timeline. We have acquired a lot of park parcels. We did that intentionally, and I think it was a good decision. But we have a lot of land that isn't developed yet, including in Westminster Triangle. And I wouldn't want to see another sort of indefinite storage parcel. So what are the thoughts on both funding, and you mentioned public-private partnerships. What's sort of the intent behind that?
Sure. So, you know, realistically, nothing would be, there wouldn't be a ribbon cutting for 3 to 4 years. Like, you know, that's, we're working, we actually have a meeting later this week to really identify some of the parcels and prioritize what parks after the bond projects are going to be in the queue for development. Westminster is top of that list. We have that designed. We're waiting on Seattle City Light Agreement, which we're hoping for this summer as well, to look at then the Rotary Park parcels. So we're working that. It's kind of a shell game. We're waiting on some grants application responses and moving dollars around, but we have the six parks that we're looking at that are currently land banked and figuring out what the queue is for those this week and how we, what's funded, what's been designed. We did get in the state budget $155,000 to do design for Edwin Pratt Park. And so we will be working on that and start doing that design. And that will be, once we have it designed, it will move up obviously to the top of the queue as well for development and looking for grant opportunities at all times.
And I can speak to the public-private partnership opportunity, which I would make sure to sort of phrase it as that, but I do think that there's a lot of enthusiasm from our side as well as the adjacent property owner who you heard from earlier. They, from what we understand from talking to them, they were actually in the market for property and actually moved beyond Shoreline to find property that would meet their needs. So finding out that we would be open to negotiating with them to change the shape of these parcels, so maybe we might the thinking that occurs most obvious to all of us is that we might purchase a small amount of their property and then sell them some of the property we're purchasing, which would allow them to expand on the site, incorporate some of the features that he mentioned in public comment that would really activate and interact with the pump track in a nice way. The pump tracks or the concepts that we've discussed for that site, most of them, and we would obviously be exploring these over the coming months and year or more with the community input and to design all of this and make these determinations. But most of the uses that we've discussed could be accommodated with less of the property. And so what the final size and shape of parcels will really be informed by the different uses and how they would play really well together and how at a 30,000 foot view, these things work nicely together. And that's sort of the nature of the public-private partnership. Any purchase and sale agreement would be conducted this same way. So there'd be appraisals subject to council approval and all the normal process. So, so public-private partnership is in the sense that we're not doing this in a vacuum, and there's this opportunity to, for these two different things to really play off of each other and support one another.
Thank you, and I would encourage you to develop the public-private partnerships, three Ps, as much as possible and to be flexible and creative with it. I mean, I think we can go much further than we have in the past and still stay within the boundaries of the law and accomplish some really cool stuff. When I lived in the Netherlands for a while, and that was just the thing they did. You would go to the playground or whatever, and you could get a beer and some really horrible fried food, and your kids would play on the playground, and it was very community building. And if we can get something like that, particularly in this neighborhood where both the residential and the commercial could use a little attention from us, I think that'd be fantastic. So thank you for the work you've done, and I look forward to seeing plans for the future.
Thank you. Is there any further comments? Councilor Adamasu?
Thank you, Straff. Gun violence is down significantly in King County. However, youth gun violence is significantly higher. There's been a 45% increase in youth gun violence. Prevention programs and places are important to engage our youth. A pump track would be a step in this direction. We can incorporate youth activities in this park with urban green space and trees. Having a highly engaged youth can deter crime adjacent to the interurban trail and create a safer trail. I'm fully in support of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Mark.
Thank you. I really appreciate the discussion of this property. Just a couple questions, because I didn't have an opportunity to go to look at it personally. Is the city's plan to only, with this public-private partnership, which I totally agree with my colleague here, is a great idea, is the city's plan, though, ultimately is only to own park? Everything else would not be part of the city's ownership. Is that true?
The city would be developing the public park space, and I would imagine that private business would be building out their space and developing it. That we would obviously work together. We anticipate to date, it's been a great conversation and good partnership, and we anticipate that only growing and really working well together and developing, as Councilmember Scully said, a really great community kind of hub space for people to be.
And I'm all for that. I just wanted to make sure that the city's focus was on parks only. So thank you for that. The second question is, can you describe a little bit about what happens to the vegetation as part of a pump park? Should we expect a lot of trees, or should we expect concrete, or what? I'm not familiar with the details of that.
There's a lot of different design opportunities in pump tracks. Some are portable and temporary, some are concrete, some are all dirt, and some might have trees, some wouldn't. This would be all part of the design process, and we would work through that of what it looks like with sound buffering with some trees, but also looking at it through a SEPTED lens, crime prevention through environmental design, with the police to make sure that the trees don't block certain sight lines that they really want to have be viable. Right now it's just dirt and invasive species, so we would put better than that in, but I can't guarantee what.
There's a handful of volunteer trees.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Will the clerk please conduct a vote?
Councilmember Scully?
Aye.
Mayor Roberts?
Aye.
Councilmember Poby?
Aye.
Councilmember Adamasu?
Aye.
Deputy Mayor Moore?
Aye.
The motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is discussion of the Climate Action Plan 2024 year in review. And we have a staff presentation. Welcome.
Thank you.
And remember to talk right into those.
Just have to get all my computers set up. Okay, you can see the slides okay?
Yes.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Paige Schein, and I'm the city's sustainability manager, and I'm here today to provide an update on the city's climate action plan and the 2024 year in review. We're going to just briefly give an overview of the climate action plan that you adopted in December 2022. We'll look at how we're implementing the climate action plan and specifically what our climate action team does. Then we'll go through some highlights of our 2024 year in review and end the presentation looking at some of the highlights of our work plan for 2025. So the City of Shoreline has a long-standing commitment to environmental sustainability and adopted an updated climate action plan in December of 2022. The climate action plan has three main goals. One, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 60% by 2030 and reach net zero emissions by 2050. The second is to restore ecosystems and increase sequestration. And the third is to increase community resilience to climate impacts. In December 2022, or in the 2022 Climate Action Plan, we have a greenhouse gas inventory. This inventory looks at data from 2019, and it tries to quantify the amount of greenhouse gas emissions associated with different activities in the city of Shoreline. The biggest source of emissions, as mentioned earlier in public comment, is of course transportation. That accounts for about 55% of our total emissions in Shoreline, with a majority of those coming from gasoline-powered vehicles. The second biggest portion of our emissions comes from how we heat and cool our homes in Shoreline, with natural gas at about 35%. The other part of our pie chart here looks at solid waste, heating oil, and electricity. So many of you are aware, but the Climate Action Plan is broken out into five different focus areas: transportation and mobility, buildings and energy, zero waste, ecosystems and sequestration, and community resilience and preparedness. Across the plan, there's three main overarching goals, which we talked about a couple slides ago. And then to support those goals, we have 13 strategies. And underneath those strategies, we have 90 actions. So we have a lot of work on our plate. The way we measure progress on our implementation is we use targets and indicators. And these targets can help us to track progress, identify what's working, and adjust our work plan over time. So our Climate Action Plan measures 25 targets across all five focus areas. The targets are specific goals that we want to reach, and our indicators are measurable signs that show whether we are moving towards the target. So for example, one of the targets is to reduce heating oil usage 100% by 2030, and the way we measure that is we look at the number of homes that use heating oil. To go dive even further into another example, I wanted to outline how we come up with the targets. So we look at the overarching goal of our climate action plans. We have three, and that goal really sets the direction. The next is we have a strategy, and those strategies are ways in which we may reach our goal. And then we look at the target, which defines what success will look like if we reach that strategy and ultimately that goal. And then finally, our indicators are like our data. They're telling us how we're doing on that plan. So for example, we have a goal to reduce emissions. One way we can do that is by electrifying space and water heating. One way we can measure that is by natural gas consumption in Shoreline. So our target is to reduce natural gas usage 60% by 2030. So in the past, you may have heard about the city's green team. We still have that green team, but it's a voluntary group of staff members that work now on internal sustainability. To make real progress on our CAP, we needed a more dedicated effort, and that's why we formed a climate action team. This group is made up of managers and supervisors from all city departments. We know that climate change is a complex and challenging issue that doesn't just face one city department. It's a shared responsibility that touches everything from transportation and buildings to waste and community resilience. That's why the climate team is so essential. It's because it brings together leaders from all the different departments to help collaborate and form some accountability so that efforts aren't siloed and they stay on track. We meet bi-monthly as a climate action team, and it's led by the environmental sustainability team, and we coordinate on actions and work plan items. We have quite a few folks working on the climate action plan. It's led by the environmental sustainability team, but supported by the climate action team and their staff. We previously on the environmental sustainability team had two full-time staff members, but at the beginning of this year, we've increased to three due to the council-approved full-time position of a sustainability specialist. This increase in staffing has allowed us to take on new actions, such as the Pedal Forward Shoreline program, and also to expand programming and high-impact actions like Energize Shoreline. Attached in your packet and also online, available for public to view, is our second annual year in review. It's made up of three components. The first is the main report, the year in review, and it looks at all the different actions and highlights some programming that we did last year. Then we have our target details, which looks at how we measure our different targets and how we collect our data. And then the last document is our implementation tracker, which shows details on all 90 actions in the CAP and whether they're in progress, ongoing, not started, and what we did last year for each of the actions. So I'm just going to highlight three of the actions we worked on last year to show some of the work that the city did for the CAP. The first is Energize Shoreline, which many of you are now familiar with. We piloted that program last year to provide free educational workshops and free and exclusive saving heat pumps on heat pump technology. This is led by the environmental sustainability team, and one of the main goals is to reduce emissions and also increase climate resiliency, because we know heat pumps also provide cooling as well as more efficient heating. The transportation services team launched Lime last year, and it's a scooter and bike share program. We have about 200 e-scooters and 50 bikes in Shoreline for residents to get around without a car. And one of the goals of the program is to, again, reduce driving in Shoreline. And then I'd be remiss not to mention that the light rail opened last year. This was a huge city project that many city teams and departments worked on over many years. And its goal is to really to reduce that amount of community-wide driving in Shoreline and increase access to different transit services. The second document I mentioned is our target details document, and it looks at the different targets we have across the CAP, how we collected the data, and where we're at now in terms of meeting our goals. So on the screen, you'll see that we have a target to reduce waste generation by 2030, and we're comparing against a 2019 baseline data, because that's when our inventory was developed. And we'll dive into this one on the next slide. We have details on all the different targets across the plan, but wanted to pull out a couple here to share. One is that despite an increase in natural gas customers in Shoreline, we've actually seen a decrease in overall usage, about 23% between 2019 and 2024. We've also seen a decrease in energy consumption, about 13%, which is getting us close to our 15% reduction goal. And then from the last slide, we've seen a decrease in the amount of waste that each resident in Shoreline is producing on average. The decrease is about 0.3 pounds per day. The last document is our implementation tracker. We update this annually, and it's a big, scary Excel-looking document, but it looks at all the 90 actions in the plan, what we did with them last year, whether they're started, ongoing, or not started. And to note, we have started or completed 67 of our 90 actions, which is an increase of 15 from 2023. So looking ahead to 2025, this table just shows a small sample of climate actions that we're taking on this year. It also shows that climate action is really just a shared responsibility across all departments. They all play a role in implementation. It doesn't just fall under one city department. Wanted to call out that we'll be, you know, working on providing incentives for e-bikes, auditing select city facilities for energy savings, increasing our incentives for the Soak It Up program. And we also wanted to mention that we understand that federal funding right now is a huge concern for a lot of cities, especially with the shifting priorities and the timelines. And we're keeping a close eye on opportunities and changes that might impact our work. But as of right now, specifically for our urban forestry climate action plan initiatives that rely on federal funding, the funding still remains. We will be moving forward with implementation, and we'll continue to monitor for any changes. And then we got a question from Councilmember Adamasu before the meeting that I just wanted to include a slide on here so we could talk about it if needed. The question was, what data does Shoreline use for tree equity, and does it properly delineate the Briarcrest neighborhood to find a tree equity number? So we use the Tree Equity Score Index to determine tree equity by census block, and city neighborhood maps that are created by the city don't always perfectly align with what the census blocks are. So the census block that includes a portion of Briarcrest doesn't perfectly align with the neighborhood map that the city's developed. Staff sent a response to all council if you'd like to take a look at that. Okay, that's all. Any questions?
Thank you. Councilor Roscoe.
Thank you. Great report, done at a great pace, and obviously we do not lack for detail, and I appreciate that. I had a couple of questions. For starters, is there any sort of citywide method for how we prioritize particular programs to do first rather than set aside?
Specifically in the CAP?
In the CAP, yeah.
We have a list of 35 high priority actions. Okay. And so those are the ones that we look to first. They're the ones that help, you know, reduce the most emissions, help the most people, you know, haven't gone through an equity lens. And so those are the ones we work on first.
All right. And is that decided on a citywide basis as opposed to within a particular department?
That was decided in the development of the plan. So that's kind of like in the cap itself.
Okay, thank you. How are we doing on food service business compliance with the zero waste rules?
That's a great question. We are continuing to do outreach on that law. We're going out again at the end of this month to continue our outreach efforts. If you'd like to know more specifically, like how many businesses that we've reached out to, I can get those numbers for you later. But are you looking for more like how many people are in compliance?
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily needing more data because sometimes we do so much data collection that that's where we put our efforts. I can assure you that it's not 100%. And I think given that it's been going on a year, I'm hoping that the city will step up enforcement. Not only is it an environmental benefit, but it's a fairness benefit. I mean, there are businesses that have an advantage over comparable businesses because they are not complying with our rules. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, from seat of the pants living in Shoreline, I would guess it's at least 50% compliance, but probably not much more than that. And I would love to see us get higher.
Sure. Thank you.
Last couple of things. Multifamily composting, what's the status of those efforts?
I think it's actually in our target details.
Oh, okay.
Let me pull it up. We are looking at, so our target is to achieve a 70% diversion rate by 2030, and so we split that out to the different sectors. In 2019, the multifamily sector was diverting about 25% of its waste to like recycling and compost, and it's actually gone down to 22%. This is a really tricky area that's been really hard to move the needle on, and in many cities, including the city of Seattle. So we have several programs to increase composting at multifamily properties, but it's really a lot of hand-holding. Residents come in and out every year. You're constantly having to reteach them the right ways to compost and recycle. So this is something we work closely with Recology on as well.
Again, that's something I'd like to see us pushing a bit. And you got to always get the complaint, my goodness, we'll have this stinky yard waste thing. Well, right now you have a stinky trash thing. So I hear the education side, but apartment buildings seem to be able to teach their tenants where to park and where they're not allowed to park. We can get this done. And at this point, given that the numbers are going down, I think we're beyond just education and outreach. I think it's time to start saying these are the rules and we need to have this done. Finally, I'm not going to re-argue because I lost and I tried to lose gracefully the electric bike program, but I still encourage us to look at things that broadly incentivize everyone rather than just focus on individuals. And I'm wondering if we have anything in the hopper related to electric bikes that is a more broad thing rather than just specific rebates.
We don't have that right now. That's not to say we won't have it in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Adamasu.
Thank you. Great report. And it was good to see all the improvements that the city has made. Couple of questions. Can we assess tree canopy percent annually instead of every 5 years? Looking at it every 5 years, it seems like we're missing a lot of data if we're going towards a goal. Right now, it looks like the city's goal is 3% in 29 years. And I'm wondering if we can't bump that up. The city of Burien right now is planting, has their own goal. So they broke it down into the number of trees they would have to plant every year. And they're planting 2,000 trees every year so they can achieve their goal. So can we do 3% by 2040, we could have a slogan, Shoreline, 40 by 40, 40% canopy by 2040, and then break down how many trees would need to be planted in the city, provide to residents, right of way, along I-5 for pollution prevention. Is there a way we can assess annually and not every 5 years?
That's a great question, and I'd have to defer to our urban forestry team on that, but okay. I do want us to note that the goal is to increase the urban tree forestry. It can't be coverage 3% by 2050. That doesn't mean we can't do it sooner,
okay, right? Yes.
So it's not keeping us in a box to do it in 29 years. If we do it sooner, that's great. There are lots of different tools that we're using right now to improve the way that we track the management of trees as well as how many we're planting. So I can, you know, work with our urban forestry team to get back to you on that.
Okay, thanks. Knowing our numbers helps us achieve our goals. Is there a place where we can see tree data with, let's say, the number of trees removed and the number of trees planted? And that would include like commercial, residential, and public.
We don't currently have that right now. What we do track, you know, that we have on our team for my environmental sustainability is the community trees program. So we do know where those trees are going. This is a, you know, a big effort at the city is to try and track these trees that we're planting. We're doing a street tree inventory soon. This is an ongoing piece of work that will continue. But right now we don't currently have that.
And then my last question is, how has the climate action team progressed? Has this team helped make shoreline projects more climate resilient?
That's a great question. The climate action team has helped really, I think, break down the silos between the different departments on climate work. So when we think about trees, that's not just sitting in one department, that's sitting across multiple departments and across multiple teams, even within a department. And so having this team meet bi-monthly is a chance for all of us to talk about that work that we're doing and to align on our work plan. And so we sit down at the beginning of every year and look at our work plan together as a team and determine what we can and can't accomplish for the year based on the resources that we have, the staff that we have, the time that we have to complete a project. And the bi-monthly check-ins are a great way to stay up to date sooner so we don't miss the gaps on things. And then I meet personally with every member of the team in the off months. So we meet and we go through their work plan and we troubleshoot issues if they're running into them.
Okay, and I just wanted to end just to dig in the importance of preventing droughts in this area. In the last 3 months, we've had the highest drought conditions in the last 131 years. So we're almost 5 inches below where we should be at this time. So this plan is very important for the resilience to prevent drought in this area. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Mark.
I'll defer to Mr. Poby first. I got a long list of questions. Thank you very much for this report. The first question, we received some well thought out letters for this presentation. Is the plan, do you have any plan on responding to any of those letters that came in?
A lot of the letters have to do with the tree canopy coverage, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Tree canopy coverage, as well as calculations and how things are calculated.
We did send a response to one person, and then we sent a response to Councilmember Adamasu as well. But we can continue to look at those.
Okay, thank you. The transportation, I get kind of confused on how we think about things. How do you think we're doing on our greenhouse gas reduction goal?
We actually are in the process of receiving an updated inventory from our work with King County Climate Collaboration, the K4C. And so we'll have an updated inventory to look at to compare to very soon. So I don't know right now, but very soon.
Okay. Well, I will very much look forward to that. One of the things that, you know, I'm trying to understand the goal met, and with as many action items as you have, I can well appreciate where you want to say goal met. One of them was regarding increasing the public electric vehicle charging locations. You say that's goal met. We now have 25 public charging ports. You said especially in lower income and vulnerable neighborhoods. Did you do that?
Did we?
Are some of the new charging ports within low income or vulnerable neighborhoods?
The city has not installed any of these charging stations. And to be clear, with the goal met is not an end of us working towards that goal. It's that we've, you know, reached that threshold to say we've met it, but we will continue to work on it. It doesn't fall away over time. We're not going to stop installing charging stations because we've met the goal.
That's what I was concerned about, because we're for transportation. If we think that we're done, we're not done. So thank you for that. I was very glad that you talked about diversion rates. And I just wanted to make sure that I understood diversion rates versus the reduction in actual weight. The total weight is everything thrown out. Diversion rates is what of that got, that was generated gets put in different ones. How really appreciate Councilmember Scully bringing up issues associated with that, and I'm very interested on things that we can do to increase that diversion rates, as it seems like we're going the wrong direction, and so I'm very interested on that. Another area you had was the 240 acres that you're going to be managing by 2030. How I'm not clear on how you're going to manage that to reach that goal. Could you explain that a little bit?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I can get back to you. That's work that's done on our urban forestry team and our parks, fleet, and facilities team.
Okay. And then the community resilience portion of the report didn't seem to have much data with it. It was more focused on the feel-good things. And I was curious, are you working on trying to come up with metrics that might work? Councilmember Adamasu talked about the stormwater and being resilient for drought. You know, obviously there's Heat Island, et cetera, et cetera. Are you thinking of ways to nail that down a little bit more? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a metric on Heat Island in our community resilience section, and we don't necessarily have a stormwater related goal because we have the surface water master plan. We try not to duplicate efforts where possible, but we do talk about trying to reduce the average number of buildings flooded by stormwater from public roads. And so that's something we work closely with our surface water team on. This section is notoriously one of the most difficult to quantify. Community resilience, how do you measure that? So these goals are, you know, attempts at trying to quantify how we're making progress on them. We're also open to adding new goals or changing them if they're not quite making sense, much like our strategic measures of the City of Shoreline. So
how, if somebody was interested in talking to you about that, what would be the path that they would take?
Just to go back a couple slides, when we looked at how we came up with these, you know, we have to make sure that they're meeting the overarching goals of the plan and then certain strategies of the plan. So all of our targets that were identified meet certain strategies outlined in the climate action plan. And so that's how we started to develop these back in 2023 after the plan was adopted. They go back to the strategy, which goes back to the goal.
So just to make sure I'm understanding it correctly, if a citizen had an idea and they wanted to suggest it, what is their path to do that? What is the appropriate method?
They could send us an email.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Poby.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, thank you for the wonderful presentation and the work on the report. It was very simple to read, 40 pages. And as I was reading, I really admire your operational strategy. It was just evident going through it and seeing that you are obviously working with all the departments, you know, parks, public works, planning. It just spoke volume in the report. So I just wanted to continue doing that. What I would have loved to see in the presentation, though, was more mention of trees. I saw pictures of trees, but not specifically pointing those out. So hope to see that in the very near future. What I would ask for you to clarify is the, is it urban forestry grant that we got, the $1 million? I thought we lost it. But you mentioned in the report that the funds are still there, federal funds are still available. Is that correct?
The federal funds for that grant are still available to the City of Shoreline. And here comes Mary Reedy to talk about it.
So great question, Councilmember Poby, because there has been, it's been a moving target, and the River Network, which is our pass-through agency that we get our funding through the U.S. Department of Agriculture, at one point said, you know, all grants were frozen, and they were. And then they were unfrozen. Some of the pass-through agencies have had their full dollars revoked and terminated, the grants terminated. The River Networks has not. And they have given us the green light, and they've been invoicing. So we invoice monthly now in order to not have too much back pay waiting. And we are looking to, the funding is through the fiscal year, so the end of September. So that is why our tree inventory and work like that is being kind of really front-ended on what we thought was going to be a three-year plan, but we're trying to get it done as soon as possible in order to at least have that funded through the federal dollars in case it does not get added to the next federal budget.
Thank you so much, Director. Appreciate it. It's exciting to hear that. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. First, I noticed in the notes at the end that because we don't have green building requirements across the city, the actual percentage of buildings that were built using green material went down. It seems like that's an opportunity, sort of, if housing is one of the big components in our contributions of greenhouse gases and climate change, that we would may want to consider thinking about sort of expanding the green building program, which has been very successful in the NUR zones across the city. So I'm correct in reading that. So the second question I have is, I mean, going back to sort of this solid waste issues. When we think about diversion and percentage of diversion, generally what percentage of, I know this may fluctuate sort of season by season, but what percentage of waste is recyclable, is recycling, and what percentage is generally composting? Or is that just too?
That is a tough question to answer. It depends on, you know, whether it's residential, commercial, or multifamily, right?
Well, let's choose the single family sector.
Sure. So in the single family sector, and what we do know from studies done at the King County landfill is that 70% of what's sent there could have been recycled or composted. So a more items in people's homes could be recycled or composted than they're actually recycling or composting, whether they have access to recycling or composting or not. It's hard to put a number on it specifically.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is when I see these diversion rates, I'm like, okay, but how much is that is composting? How much is recycling? But it's okay if you don't have the answer. Just more curious about that. The question I do have is, have we looked or have others looked at and really tried to talk to people, especially in that single family sector, because I think that's the easiest sector, to why they're not composting? I mean, recycling is a hard thing because for a lot of reasons, I mean, especially the haulers want everything clean and dry, and there's still a lot of wish cycling. So we'll just set recycling aside. If people could recycle right, we'd have a lot more. Everything would be better. Clean your cans before putting in the recycling. But in terms of composting, I mean, which is relative much more straightforward, if it's organic and it can go into composting. But have we asked, the question I ask is, have we asked people and tried to, or not, maybe not us, but I mean maybe others, why people are not composting? Do we have answers to that?
That is also a really tricky question to answer, and I just want to point out one of our targets is to get an increase in recycling and composting across the city, across different sectors. Single family is composting at a very high rate. It's 97.7%.
Well, no, in terms, that's the number of people who have the service. Yeah. That's not, I'll just say that I know some of my neighbor is subscribed to the service. I mean, we require composting but they're not used. I mean, I look down blocks and I know that composting is picked up every week, and I don't see green bins in front of everyone's house every week.
Yes, that is a good point. Tricky.
That statistic is, okay, we're subscribed, but how do we get people to actually, I want to know, do we know why people are not using it? Is it purely education? Is it not having the right kind of green bags to sort composting? Is it a cultural barrier? Do we have any sort of information about the people who are not composting, so we can actually target our education efforts to say to these individuals why, about the benefits of composting?
It's a combination of, I think, everything you said. There's just a lot of education that has to go into how people sort their waste. If they're not from this region, it's really confusing. When people come here and see three bins and they're not from the Puget Sound, they don't know where everything goes and they're afraid of making a mistake. Even if it's just simply putting your food in the green bin, there's rules that are different across different cities, even on what you can put in your green bin, depending on your hauler. And so that's like one barrier, is just the lack of awareness and education. Another barrier is that just facilitating the access to different properties. When we think about like the multifamily sector and commercial sector, property managers have to get on board.
I want to sort of step those aside because those are harder. I'm thinking more at least in the single family sector.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it on the head. We could definitely do more research into why that is. There is a state law that's been passed in 2022, the Organics Management Law, which requires bigger businesses like commercial multifamily to start composting more. Really also the access to the infrastructure is really just in this region. Like we have Cedar Grove and there's Lens Composting. In the eastern part of the state, right, that's not as prevalent. And so this, is like a education thing. It's, they're unaware of what they can or can't do and they have their green bin when they move to a city like Shoreline. So there is a huge education component and we work with Recology a lot on this. Every single year we come up with a plan on how we're going to get more people subscribed to compost and reduce contamination in our compost and recycling. And every year it's still a huge challenge. Just because of the sheer number of people you need to reach out to help make that change.
Okay. Councilor Sully.
Just wanted to follow up on that. I mean, the deputy mayor and I joined you in tramping around in the mud in Snohomish County a few months ago at Cedar Grove, learning about it. And I'm not sure you do it right, because I learned I wasn't doing it right. There's a lot of things that can spoil a yard waste load. And education is part of it, but I don't know that we're ever going to get to 100% understanding, because I care very much about these things and I nerd out on it and I still get it wrong. And I've learned all along the way, gosh, I shouldn't have been putting that in the recycling, or I've been putting stuff in yard waste that they wouldn't accept. So as a city, what I'm hoping we can do is pressure our service providers to accept as much as possible. And there's gonna be money coming in through the Producer Responsibility Act that can back end some of that stuff so that some of the sorting is done there, right? And if it gets easier, if you don't have to remember, okay, this can go in compost, this can't, I can't figure it out. If it becomes broad categories, I think we'll end up with more compliance, and I am certain we'll end up with less contamination, because I too am always astonished driving along the street and seeing what's coming out of the yard waste and recycling bins. It's like that doesn't work. So I am quite willing to use our bargaining power to push for that, because I've been surprised at how picky some of our providers have been.
Any further discussion? You can't, Deputy Mayor.
The city manager talked about the pop-up that Recology is doing here. Some of the things that were on there were textiles and styrofoam and other items like that. Where do you consider them as part of your waste definitions? Are you considering them recycled when they come to a pop-up, or just trying to understand how you consider it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Those are considered special item recyclings. We get reports from Recology that look at specifically special item recycling, batteries, styrofoam, textiles, things like that. They're not necessarily tracked here. It's fairly a small amount you might imagine per month that we might get. Like over the course of a year, it might add up a little bit more. So that's where they fall, special item recycling.
I understand, for instance, textiles are a big growth area for the amount of space that they take in the landfill. And I'm curious on if there are efforts that you are thinking about doing to make more of these not go into the landfill, but instead go into one of these special recycling things.
We don't have anything specifically besides promoting the Recology pop-ups and working with Recology to ensure that they're advertising that service that they provide. Unfortunately, textiles also end up in the recycling and the compost. So, you know, we're trying to really get those items into the right bins if possible first, and then getting them to also special item recycling at the same time.
So I would agree there is a education component, and there's also a push component that you can see I'm not alone with my great interest in this topic. And the landfill is filling up. We are all going to be paying more. It's really important to get the diversion significantly higher, or we're all going to be stuck paying bills we don't want to pay. And I would encourage you and the city to be aggressive at trying to help make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, comments? With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.